If you enjoyed our conversation, as always, thanks for listening to Black Voices in Color podcast. Please tune in for our next episode about Black culture across the states, which I'm really excited about, by the way.
Yeah, so excited about that.
And always remember to empower your voice, share your experiences, and you can change the world. This is Deanna,
Devin,
Shani,
Justine,
and Iris,
and we're from Montbello High School.
Bye.
Reach new heights with Elevating Denver, the monthly program dedicated to the people, events, and services in the Mile High City. In February on Elevating Denver.
Consumer input creates Denver's inclusive guide.
Envision yourself just living your best life.
Denver Sheriff Department has a word of warning.
There have been very sophisticated scammers, and unfortunately, there have been victims that have fallen for this.
The Owl Club provides a vibrant community experience.
You sure you want to play that card, young fella?
Those stories and more are on the next episode of Elevating Denver.
Fancy a stroll through quintessential Main Street, USA? Then hop on the D-Line from Denver's Union Station or simply drive 15 minutes northwest. When you spot this iconic water tower, you'll know you've reached charming Old Town Arvada. History of this area predates even Colorado statehood with the discovery of gold. This event is credited with starting the gold rush in the West. Today, it's home to a community that loves to come together and have fun. From farmers markets to seasonal festivals, there's always something going on. Beyond the events calendar, treat yourself to boutique shops and art galleries. Or visit the Arvada Center for the Arts and Humanities, where you'll find even more art collections and premier live theater productions. With 90 beautiful parks and a well-established system of trails for hiking, biking, and horseback riding, Arvada truly is the perfect city break. Cycling enthusiasts may want to explore Clear Creek Trail, and from there, connect to bike trails that lead all the way to Golden and Denver. Old Town Arvada's quaint yet modern restaurants, bars, breweries, and coffee shops provide endless opportunities to relax and unwind. Indulge in award-winning European cake. Sample locally brewed IPA. Visit the tasting room of America's first single-pot still whiskey distillery, a traditionally Gaelic technique. Or nosh on anything from burgers to ceviche. Whatever your delight, this place has got you covered. Locals and visitors alike find nourishment in the beauty and comfort of Old Town Arvada. Consider this your invitation to step into small-town ambiance without leaving the Denver metro area.
Welcome to your Denver City Council. Please stand by. Full coverage of your Denver City Council begins now.
Tonight's meeting is being interpreted into Spanish. Sam or Alejandro, would you please introduce yourself and let our viewers know how to enable translation on their devices?
Yes, of course. Thank you for having us. Hello, everyone. My name is Sam Guzman with the CLC. And along with my colleague Alejandro, we will be interpreting today's meeting into Spanish. I'll give you instructions on how to access interpretation in Spanish. Buenas tardes a todos. Mi nombre es Samuel Guzman con la CLC y juntamente con mi colega Alejandro estaremos interpretando la reunión de hoy al español. Si se une con nosotros virtualmente a través de Zoom, por favor, en su pantalla busque el icono que dice interpretación, un icono de globo, oprima ese botón y de ahí seleccione la opción de escuchar en español. si está con nosotros presencialmente en la cámara y desea escuchar en español, busque al fondo de la cámara a la derecha un asistente que le puede dar audífonos para poder escuchar en español. Muchas gracias and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sam. Welcome to the Denver City Council meeting on Monday, February 10th, 2025. Council members, please rise as you are able and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Council members, please join Councilmember Parity as they lead us in the Denver City Council land acknowledgement.
The Denver City Council honors and acknowledges that the land on which we reside is the traditional territory of the Ute, Cheyenne, and Arapaho peoples. We also recognize the 48 contemporary tribal nations that are historically tied to the lands that make up the state of Colorado. We honor elders, past, present, and future, and those who have stewarded this land throughout generations. We also recognize that government, academic, and cultural institutions were founded upon and continue to enact exclusions and erasures of Indigenous peoples. May this acknowledgement demonstrate a commitment to working to dismantle ongoing legacies of oppression and inequities and recognize the current and future contributions of Indigenous communities in Denver.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Madam Secretary, roll call.
Flynn.
Here.
Alvidres.
Here.
Gilmore.
Here.
Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Cashman.
Here.
Lewis. Parity.
Here.
Romero Campbell.
Here.
Sawyer.
Here.
Torres.
Here.
Watson.
Here.
Madam President.
Here.
12 members present.
There are 12 members present. Council has a quorum. Approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes of February 3rd? Seeing none, the minutes stand approved. Council announcements. Are there any council announcements this afternoon? Councilman Sawyer.
Thank you, Madam President. I wanted to just remind residents of District 5, if you would like to join us tomorrow night, 5:30 p.m. at George Washington High School, we are having our annual community open house. So it's an opportunity to just come and talk with different city agencies and ask questions and talk directly with the people who are running the operations of our city. So again, tomorrow night, 5:30 p.m., that is February 11th, 5:30 p.m. at George Washington High School in the library, which is on the second floor. So please come and join us. And then, Madam President, I also just wanted to acknowledge last week was a really difficult week in our community. And I want to just take a second to acknowledge the fear, the stress, and all of the different things that our community members felt last Wednesday. It was a really difficult time, and while I don't feel comfortable talking any specifics about it, I didn't want to let today go past without acknowledging communities that have been affected by things that happened last week, and just wanted to take a moment to say, we feel you, we hear you. We know how concerned, upset, and scared many of our residents are. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Not to put words in your mouth, but that we stand in solidarity with everyone, and we stand in solidarity as a council with the residents of Denver. Thank you for saying that. I feel the same sentiments. Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to let the folks in District 4 know that we are sending out a survey today. We've talked about it, but it's a community survey to get feedback for opinions, thoughts, and ideas as we move forward for 2025. We're doing it a little differently. We're sending it out by text. So this is going to be new. We will see. So if you get it, it's not spam. You will see it, my picture's on it, and if you don't receive one by text, please contact our office, the Denver City Council District 4 office. Go to the website, give our office a call, and we will make sure that you have access to to the survey, and we can do it electronically, and we'll also have hard copy, paper copies if that's more comfortable for some. So that's it. So District 4, a survey is going out today. I'll talk. Thank you. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. Councilwoman Torres.
Thank you, Madam President. Just want to announce I'll be participating in a town hall partnering with Revision in Westwood, Denver Health, and Denver Public Schools for a town hall for our immigrant refugee communities around city health and school resources, as well as recent changes and Know Your Rights information. Please join us. It'll be at the Revision Gallery, which is on Morrison Road, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. this Thursday, February 13th. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. Councilman Gilmer.
Thank you, Council President. First, I can't ever start speaking if we have another elected in the room, and so want to acknowledge former Council President Elba Wedgeworth is sharing her time with us in chambers here, and so good to see you this evening. Also want to let folks know that we have the 10th annual District 11 Town Hall on Thursday, February 13th. It will start at 5:30 and go until 7:30 p.m., and it will be held at the Evie Garrett Dennis campus, and very honored to have the partnership and collaboration of both of our at-large council members, as well Council Member Parody and Council Member Gonzalez Gutierrez, and so appreciate their support as well. And then just a quick reminder to so many people, especially in the Denver metro area, with the recent events that happened last week in our city, I think a lot of people, beyond being fearful, are also worried about speaking up or saying something about what is going on, and that we are safe in Denver. If there was an issue with our safety in Denver, I would fully assume and know that the chief of police, the mayor, and our director of safety would have asked city council for a supplemental to help make us safe, but that has not happened. And so what that tells me is that there's a lot of negative, fearful rhetoric out there, and I encourage Denver residents to make sure you're speaking up, that we do have a safe city, and that we have a 1-888 number for folks to call if they are concerned about their rights, if they need more information, and that we are not bullied or made to be fearful, that we can't exercise our First Amendment rights, which is freedom of speech. And that is very important as we talk about our Constitution, and so wanted to put that out there as well, so that hopefully we can start hearing more so from Denver residents who don't believe that these are the virtues or values that we appreciate in our city. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you. Councilmember Watson.
Thank you, Madam President. I wanted to thank the members of District 9 for coming out to our Fair Election Fund town hall that we held on last Tuesday, the 4th. Thank you for coming out, engaging in a robust discussion. I'd like to thank our friends from the Clerk and Recorder's Office, Nick and Andy. I won't give the last name so people won't follow you, but thank you so much for being there, being willing to answer the questions, and really elevate the importance of ensuring that our elections are transparent and they're accessible to all that choose to run. We will be having a public hearing and lots more discussion on Fair Election Fund next Tuesday, because Monday's a day off. So next Tuesday at City Council, discussing all of the important changes that we're bringing forward based on community voice. So thank you all. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. Councilmember Lewis, welcome to the meeting and have your announcement.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I just wanted to thank the District 8 residents who were able to attend the town hall this weekend, this Saturday. It was a beautiful visioning session, and so really appreciate folks taking the time to think about how we work together individually and collectively to build a district that I think we all can be proud of. And then an invitation to District 8 residents as well, if they are interested in participating on our community panels, that they can email our council office directly to sign up. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Alvidrez.
Thank you, Council President. District 7 will also be having a Know Your Rights training as well as information with several attorneys on site and notaries this Thursday at 6:30. If you would like to know the location, you could contact us at district7@denvergov.org. Este jueves a las 6:30 de la tarde vamos a tener un evento de saber sus derechos. Prepárate y infórmate. Y si quieres saber dónde va a ser o más información, puedes mandar correo electrónico a denvergov.org. denvergov.org. Thank you. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Just want to make an announcement that the city is closed next Monday in observation of President's Day. So we will be moving our city council meeting from Monday, the 17th, and we will be here on Tuesday, February 18th. Seeing no other announcements, there are no presentations, there are no communications. And there is one proclamation being read this afternoon. Councilmember Watson, will you please read Proclamation 250164?
Thank you, Council President. Proclamation number 250164, honoring Denver's role in the Negro Baseball League history and its connection to Denver historic Five Points. Whereas Denver, Colorado holds a significant place in the history of professional baseball, being the first location in the United States where high-level professional baseball was played on an integrated field, showcasing the talent of both white and black teams. And whereas during the 1920s and 1930s, professional baseball opportunities for fans in the Western United States were limited, inspiring the Denver Post to organize a landmark tournament known as the Little World Series of the West, offering substantial prize money and drawing some of the finest baseball talent from across the nation. And whereas in 1934, Charles Poss Parsons, sports editor of the Denver Post, demonstrated bold leadership and vision by inviting the Negro League team to participate in the tournament. Despite the challenges posed by the racial climate of the time, when Colorado's government was significantly influenced by the Ku Klux Klan, and whereas the inclusion of Negro League All-Stars such as Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Buck Leonard, and Cool Papa Bell, love that name, not only elevated the quality of competition, but also represented a courageous step towards integration in sports, inspiring progress amidst systemic racial barriers. And whereas these All-Star players stayed at the Rossonian Hotel in Five Points, a historic neighborhood known as the cultural heart of Denver's black community, where they enjoyed the vibrant jazz scene and nightlife by night while making a name for themselves by winning baseball games by day and playing in front of sports writers from across the country. And whereas Denver's all-black team, the White Elephants, sponsored by businessman A.H.W. Ross, played for 21 years representing Five Points, whose legacy of excellence, resilience, and cultural pride during an era of segregation and discrimination continues to inspire future generations. And whereas the African-American Heritage Calendar highlighted important historic moments within the African-American community, including the impact of the Negro Leagues in Denver. And whereas the African-American Heritage Calendar was produced and distributed free of charge since 1980 until the early 2000s, serving as an important cultural and historic resource. And whereas Mr. Walter Wedgeworth and Mr. Moses Brewer played a pivotal role in the distribution of the African American Heritage Calendar, ensuring that this valuable cultural and historic resource reached communities far and wide, educating and inspiring generations to come. And whereas the African American Heritage Calendar was widely recognized for its excellence within winning 17 Communications Excellence in Black Advertising Awards and receiving national recognition, including a feature on the Today Show. And whereas these initiatives exemplify a dedication to education, cultural preservation, and a recognition of African-American achievements in history, sports, and beyond. And whereas the calendar's impact grew significantly, expanding from its original 3,000 copies distributed across Metro Denver to an impressive 90,000 calendars shipped nationwide each year. And whereas building on Denver's reputation as a champion for both baseball and civil rights, in 2021, Major League Baseball moved the All-Star Game out of Atlanta to Denver in response to a Georgia law that many believe would make it more difficult for minorities, particularly African Americans, to vote. And whereas the Five Points Business Improvement District, an historic Five Points neighborhood, commemorated the 2021 Denver All-Star Weekend by displaying banners of Negro League players at the historic Sonny Larson Park ball field. Now therefore be proclaimed by the Denver City Council, Section 1, that the Denver City Council recognizes and honor the outstanding contributions of Mr. Moses Brewer and Mr. Walter Wedgeworth for their tireless efforts in distributing the African American Heritage Calendar, preserving history commemorating Five Points' role in the Negro Leagues, and fostering cultural awareness within all of our communities. And Section 2, that the Clerk and Recorder of the City and County of Denver shall affix a seal of the City and County of Denver to this proclamation, and that a copy be transmitted to the Honorable Elbert Wedgeworth and to the Denver Historic Five Points Business Improvement District and to Ms. Lashita Sayers.
Oops. Thank you, Councilmember. Your motion to adopt?
I move that Proclamation 250164 be adopted.
It has been moved and seconded. It has been moved and seconded. Comments by members of council. Councilmember Watson.
Council President, members of council, and folks that are here within the chamber, Black History Month is not just a month for African Americans, for us to celebrate all the great things that have happened within the City and County of Denver. It's an opportunity for education for all folks within the City and County of Denver. Understanding the pivotal role that we have played for baseball, the pivotal role that the Negro Leagues play to make sure that we have some of the greatest players today in Major League Baseball. Without the sacrifices made of those players, we would not have the sport that we enjoy every year. Leaders in our communities made sure that the Negro Leagues were accessible, made sure that African-American players, Black players across the country had a place to come, and they came to the Harlem of the West, they came to Five Points. I am so honored to represent Five Points as a city council member for many reasons. And one of those great reasons is that our roots, the roots of our heritage, the roots of our people, the roots of our sports, the roots of the education and the history of African-Americans in this city run deep through that community and through our neighborhoods. I'd like to thank both our speakers who will be coming up and sharing their thoughts for the good work that they have done to continue building and standing on the shoulders of the great men and women that has made Five Points a place for the African-American community. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Watson. Madam Secretary, roll call.
Flynn.
Aye.
Ovidres.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Cashman.
Aye.
Lewis.
Aye.
Parody.
Aye.
Romero Campbell.
Aye.
Sawyer.
Aye.
Torres.
Aye.
Watson.
Aye.
Madam President.
Aye. Madam Secretary, close the voting and announce the results.
13 ayes.
13 ayes. Proclamation 250164 has been adopted. Councilmember Watson, who would you like to bring up today to accept the proclamation?
Well, I'll first would like to ask the Honorable Elbert Wedgeworth, former City Council President, if you don't mind coming forward and making a few comments. And then, Lashita, if you don't mind as well, for the good work that you did in collaboration with the Five Points Business District.
Well, thank you very much, Madam President and members of Council. My name is Elbert Wedgeworth, and I live in Council District 9 in the Whittier neighborhood. I wish to thank Councilman Darrell Watson and everyone on City Council for this proclamation honoring Denver's role in Negro Baseball League history and its connection to the Denver Historic Five Points neighborhood. On behalf of my family and my father, Walter Wedgeworth Sr., in his role in distributing the African American Heritage Calendar, which reached various communities throughout the city to inspire future generations. This is very important to my father. Every year he looked forward to distributing thousands and thousands of calendars to people, along with Moses Brewer and also along with Harold Brewer, which I think most of you remember Harold also, because they worked as a team and they faithfully made sure that everyone could get this calendar in recruiting, also me and my siblings to distribute it. And so, because we knew how important it was to him. And my father passed away in August 2019, and he would be so pleased, kind of shy, really, but really pleased about the proclamation tonight. So thank you very much.
Councilmember Watson.
And Lashita.
So thank you so much for this proclamation. I love celebrating Black History Month. My name is Lashita, and I was part of the organizing group that put together the larger-than-life display of the Negro League players, some of the more eccentric ones, during the All-Star Weekend a few years ago in Five Points. And I wear many hats as a Black woman here in Colorado. I'm a mom, I'm a small business owner, I'm a number of things, and baseball is not one of them. But in that exercise where we were looking for another element to celebrate and recognize the contributions of African Americans to things like this American pastime of baseball, I learned a lot. And I'm very thankful for this proclamation because it helps to reinforce the lessons that we learned from the Negro League, the players, the organizers who recognized the fact that these folks had talent, they had passion, and despite the color of their skin, which they had no control over, they found a way to persevere and to overcome a lot of the challenges that were put before them. And I think that those are lessons that maybe we didn't need to use them recently, but we now, a number of us, find those lessons to be really important. And so we're thankful for those lessons, to be reminded of the opportunity that exists, even though what is right in front of us might not seem so bright, that we need to maintain that persistence. And this recognition is symbolic of that, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, please read the bills for introduction.
From the Finance and Governance Committee, 24-1676, a bill for an ordinance amending Chapter 15, Article 3, concerning campaign finances. 25-0096, a bill for an ordinance making a rescission from and an appropriation in the Culture and Recreation Special Revenue Fund Series to make a cash transfer to Parks Legacy Capital Improvement Funds. From the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee, 25-0086, a bill for an ordinance changing the zoning classification for multiple properties in Chaffee Park, Sunnyside, Highland, and Jefferson Park. From the Safety, Housing, Education, and Homelessness Committee, 25-0090, a bill for an ordinance approving a proposed amendatory intergovernmental agreement between the City and County of Denver and Denver Health and Hospital Authority to provide medical services in coordination with Denver Human Services Child Welfare. 25-0091, a bill for an ordinance approving a proposed contract modification, contract amendment number 4 between the City and County of Denver and Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing as incentive for providing Medicaid eligibility related work.
Council members, this is your last opportunity to call out an item. Councilmember Parity, will you please make the motions for us this evening?
Yes, Council President.
Now I will do a recap. Under resolutions, Councilmember Sawyer has called out Council Resolution 250095 for questions and comments. Councilmember Lewis has called out Council Resolutions 25-0077 and 25-0088 for questions and comments, each to be considered separately. And let me go to a different. And Councilwoman Alvidrez has called out, sorry, I don't have this in front of me. Councilwoman Alvidrez has called out Council Resolutions 250117, 250118, and 250119 for questions and comments in a block. Under bills for introduction, Councilmember Lewis has called out Council Bill 241676 for questions and comments. And I have called out Council Bill 250086 for a motion to postpone. Under bills for final consideration, no items have been called out. Under pending, no items have been called out. Madam Secretary, please put our first item on the screen. Council Resolution 250095, a resolution approving a proposed purchase and sale agreement between the City and County of Denver, High Line Swim Club LLC, and 8552 Garden Circle, located in the Windsor neighborhood in Council District 5. Councilmember Sawyer, please go ahead with your comments on Council Resolution 250095.
Thank you, Madam President. Everyone has been asking this week, you know, how's it going? And my answer to everyone has been, I choose joy. That is the only answer I have at this moment. And so I choose joy, and I want to point out this resolution because it is so joyful. This is a resolution for the city to purchase land at the corner of Mississippi and Dayton in Council District 5 to turn it into a park. This is one of the promises that we made the community and the voters who approved the Parks Legacy Fund, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago now. It's been a while. Okay. And so probably 3.5 years ago, this council rezoned this land. We rezoned it to OSB, which is open space private ownership, because there was a group of investors who wanted to turn this land into a private swim club. And that did not work out. And so they put the land on the market. And I saw it go on the market, and I called Lisa Lumley, and I said, can we buy this? Can we buy this as a park? It would be so great. It's in a location that does not have a 10-minute walkable park in the area. It is one of our nest neighborhoods. This is an extraordinary opportunity. And 3.5 years later, Lisa, here we are tonight. This is the actual resolution to purchase this land. And so this is such an exciting and incredible and extraordinary thing that is coming forward, that is going to be amazing for our residents, that has been 3.5 years in the making, that has taken the Department of Finance and our real estate division, that has taken Parks and Rec, that has taken, and I want to just acknowledge, $75,000 of this purchase price is coming from the Denver Parks Trust as well. There are dollars to cover the closing. There are dollars to cover a visioning process with the community. We promised the voters who approved the Parks Legacy Fund 6 years ago that we would do this kind of thing, and this is the first time it's happening in District 5. And so I choose joy today, and I couldn't let this go by without acknowledging it, without saying thank you to Lisa, without saying thank you to Gordon, and to your teams. Jesus, thank you so much. This is really, really exciting for the residents of District 5. And I truly appreciate you guys sticking with it and getting this done. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations. That's always great when the city is able to acquire parkland. Well done. Madam Secretary, please put the next item on our screens. Council Resolution 250077, a resolution approving a proposed amendment between the City and County of Denver and the Center for African American Health to increase access to evidence-informed nutrition standards, eating environments, and food skills for children, family, and caregivers in Denver. Councilmember Lewis, please go ahead with your comments on Council Resolution 250077.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to acknowledge the partnership between the City and County of Denver and the Center for African American Health and the incredible work that they do in Council District 8. This is in Park Hill in particular, which is one of Denver's Black neighborhoods. And so to have this resource available to folks in community and to see the work that they do for not only Black families, but families in general is duly appreciated. And so just wanted to call out them for the incredible work that they do for our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary, please put the next item on our screens. Council Resolution 250088, a resolution approving a fifth amendment between the City and County of Denver and Volunteers of America Colorado branch for a family motel shelter and support services citywide. Councilmember Lewis, please go ahead with your comments on Council Resolution 250088.
Hi, thank you so much. I wanted to know about if there were dollars allocated within these dollars for the San and Sage Motel in East Colfax.
Hello, City Council. Chris Lowell, Department of Housing, Stability, Government Affairs. Thank you for the question, Councilwoman Lewis. So yes, this program currently is operating out of the Sand and Sage Motel. That's at the interim location for the program. The GOBAN funded Theodora Family Hotel will be opening imminently, and we believe in May we'll shift from the Sand and Sage and shift these folks to that newly constructed facility.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is that it, Councilwoman?
Yeah, for now.
All right. Madam Secretary, please put the next item on our screens. 250117, a resolution approving a proposed contract between the City and County of Denver and Colorado Village Exchange Collaborative for providing shelter and operation services for people experiencing homelessness at La Paz Micro Community in Council District 7. Resolution 250118, approving a proposed contract between the City and County of Denver and Colorado Village Collaborative to provide shelter operations and services for people experiencing homelessness in Council District 9. And 250119, a resolution approving a contract between the City and County of Denver and Colorado Village Collaborative to provide shelter operations and services for people experiencing homelessness at Steel Village Micro Community in Council District 9. Councilmember Alvidrez, please go ahead with your questions on Council resolutions in a block, 250117, 250118, and 240119.
Thank you, Council President. And my questions will be specifically about the one in District 7, so 0117. Thank you, Chris, for getting me some answers. I still have a little bit of confusion, but the biggest question that residents are asking is it going up to 120 people? Can you provide an answer to that?
Thank you, Councilwoman. I'd be happy to. There's 60 units at the La Paz Micro Community. There will be 60 units this year. The 120 figure that you're seeing in the contract is anticipating flipping those 60 units one time within the year to then serve a total of 120 unique people.
Thank you. And then I was trying to look back at the old contract, and that also had 120 people, correct?
I would have to go back
for
and look
60
at
units,
the
2023.
Yeah. It passed in 2023 for 2024 operations, so I'd have to go and refresh my memory.
Okay. As of December, I was showing 97 people served and total exits at 42, with only 12 of those being to housing. And so I'm really confused about how we're going to get to the numbers that we're projecting.
Good afternoon, Midori Higa, she, her pronouns, Director of Homelessness Resolution Programs for HOST. So a few weeks ago, Cole provided an All in Mile High update related to our Housing Central Command model that we're going to be using. And so for this year, Housing Central Command will incorporate referrals from all of the All in Mile High sites, which would be inclusive of all of the CVC items up tonight. They're being all usurped back into the All in Mile High group, the Monroe and Steel Street as well. And that would also include, just to name it, because I feel like I should name it, but the Doubletree, which is known as the Aspen, Best Western, which is known as Stone Creek, Comfort Inn, the other two micro communities, Stay In and Alati. So the goal is that when folks are entering these spaces, they're getting assessed. Their assessments will help them be referred to housing options that are available. And so all of those numbers were spelled out, but the goal for us is to get close to 950 specifically resources that we have allocated in addition to the other housing resources that are available within our community outside of Housing Central Command through coordinated entry and with rapid resolution.
Great. And I guess the part that is a little bit confusing for me is I thought those were city staff, not CVC staff, that will be doing
of Housing Central Command. That's a fair question, because there's a lot going on with Housing Central Command. So I will be overseeing an assistant director for Housing Central Command. Underneath that assistant director will be four city staff. And one of those staff is going to be related to data and process. One of those staff is related to navigation. One of those staff is related to stabilization, and another staff for complex cases. And then we'll have two other city staff under there, one to manage furniture and move-in process, because it's a big deal and we wanna make sure everyone has move-in kits. And the other person to help manage some of our processes, policies, procedures, and some of the intake support at our partner sites. All of our All in Mile High partner sites will contribute three roles to Housing Central Command. There's an intake specialist, at least one intake specialist per site, navigators, and so those navigators who work under the city staff to make sure that housing navigation is happening for all the folks that are referred through Housing Central Command, and the stabilizers also within all of the contracts, and they would support the housing stabilization for 12 months for housing resources going through Housing Central Command. So it's a yes and. Yes, there are city staff, and also relying on these contractors to provide staff through Housing Central Command as well.
Okay. Looking at this, something else that is confusing is it states in the breakdown, sorry, I'm like flipping through different pages. In the breakdown, it says, for example, two housing navigators, two housing stabilizers, two housing support managers. How do they fit in with the staff that you're talking about? Because it sounds like what you're saying is that they're only required to have two, and this is like about four-ish or more people doing that work, because it also says, or up to four.
I don't know what you're referencing, so since I can't see what you're seeing, I'm afraid to comment on it. I don't want to misspeak to something. That would be hard. We're working to have, I didn't prepare anything for Housing Central Command, so I don't have any of that information. But we can send some refresher information out about the Housing Central Command structure and how many navigators we're having from the community and how many stabilizers. Most of it has been based off of the number of units each site has available, and less heavy on the stabilizer side, because we have a program that's all stabilizers.
So it's under the budget breakdown with the number of employees, just to give you the reference of where it is in the contract. And so that is somewhat helpful. And let me get back to my questions. One of the other things in Schedule A of the contract was just the Excel bill, and I'm curious like what those costs are, and just does City Facilities also do any work at the sites, at yeah. La Paz specifically?
Yeah, so to be clear, for these three contracts, La Paz and Steel Street are city-owned spaces, city-owned or operated spaces, because we don't the whole land exchange business. But yes, so if there's any significant infrastructure needs, which would be laid out in at the very end of the contract under Appendix A, it says whether that would fall upon the contractor, or it would fall upon the city to take care of. So the contractor does pay the utility bills, and I know that question was posed right before council started, and we need to pull up the invoice records to be able to tell you what those Excel bills look like month over month, but the contract does have a utility line that would cover the cost of their Excel bills.
Okay. And I know that there was a large underspend last year with that contract. Can you tell me what caused that underspend?
Largely, it was a delay in opening, right? So we had anticipated that these sites would open at the very beginning of the year, and we had lots of challenges, and they did not open at the beginning of the year, so they opened much later. I don't recall off the top of my head how late this opened, so March, we're hearing,
but
so that was part of the delay. We also had worked into the budget last year a consideration of the expansion, which did not happen last year, so that was also part of it.
Okay, and I noticed in the original contract there was a safety manager position and not in this contract, and I'm curious why that is.
CVC has been doing some restructuring of their staffing positions. So there's probably someone doing the same work, but not as quote unquote safety manager. I had a new org chart from them, but I don't have that readily available, nor can I explain the function or role, like what the job description is for each person in the new org chart, but we can look into the safety manager position and let you know who would be covering those responsibilities this year.
Okay, thank you. I do feel like we need to do some follow-up specifically with CVC directly. So I'm going to propose that pursuant to Council Rule 3.6, I postpone 25-0117 for consideration until the next regularly scheduled council meeting. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you. Is there anyone from CVC, Colorado Village Collaborative? No. Okay.
No, we didn't have enough notice for them.
Yeah. Okay. Councilmember Alvidez, so there's no motion? You don't want to postpone or anything? You're good?
Yes, I'm going to postpone 1 week until our regularly scheduled council meeting.
Okay. So Councilmember Alvidez, what would you like for us to do with Council Resolution 25-0117? Seven.
Pursuant to Council Rule 3.6, I'm calling this out, this resolution to postpone consideration to the next regularly scheduled council meeting.
Thank you. No motion is required. Council Resolution 25-0117 has been postponed. Madam Secretary, please put the next item on our screens. Ordinance 24-1676 concerning campaign finances. Councilmember Lewis, please go ahead with your questions on Council Bill 1676.
Okay, I think I got most of them answered. I do have one lingering one regarding the RFP that we discussed during committee for the moderation and the facilitation of the debates. If you could come and tell me how you all resolved that piece, that aspect of the conversation.
Sure. Andy Sakaris, Chief Deputy City Clerk within the Clerk and Recorder's Office. My unit oversees campaign finance. So we're still working through that process. So what the language in this bill allows us to do is appropriate funds from the Fair Elections Fund, potentially come back to council for funds, but we're still in sort of talks with city agencies to sort of build that RFP process out. We will, you know, get input from council on that process, but, you know, really it allows us we went from shall to maybe, so we may put out an RFP process for this. That being said, I think we're still in discussions for costing and sort of what different pieces within sort of the agreement within the city will look like, and then based on that, then it'll sort of trickle down to the needs of the actual RFP. If it's, you know, arts and venue can provide the space, the RFP will not require them to go out and find the space. If broadcasting can be covered by, you know, Denver 8 or another city agency. So we're still sort of in the process and formulating what the RFP is going to look like. That being said, the language allows us to sort of pull that together. But yeah, that's sort of where we're at.
Okay, so I think that's where I'm a bit confused on the how and the shall. Because when this was in committee,
it was my understanding that it wouldn't come to first reading without that first being resolved. And it sounds like it's not yet resolved. And so I'm not sure if go ahead, Sawyer.
Yeah, we can. Okay, great. So what we did was we removed the language that said the city shall contract, right? So what that did, so that's not in this language. Right. So what that does is it gives the clerk's office the flexibility and the time to be able to make a determination about what comes next, right? So there is no requirement for an RFP process. What the language does is it gives the clerk's office the ability to then say, we do want an RFP for this and we can afford it, or we don't need an RFP, we're gonna do this. So it sort of just, it gives the clerk's office that legal authority and that ability and that flexibility without the language that was originally in there in committee, which says, the city shall put out an RFP for a third party contractor. So the option of it is on the table. It is not, the language is not in here, it is not required.
And I was going to add, Councilmember Lewis, it's not dissimilar to what the clerk's office responsibilities have always been. The clerk's office, they manage this part of the elections. So when we put shall, we were telling them that they must do this. A may allows them to continue to decide if and when and how they engage in the facilitation of debates, which is required under the law that there are debates. They will, through their due diligence, make that determination. It's not something within the bill that say that they shall do it. They may do it if they seem it as necessary.
It allows for, I understand that. Okay, so the language says that it allows for the clerk to take out an RFP if they so desire. However, the language still reads that the clerk will not moderate the debates or have any direct role in formulating questions asked. And so how would you still require an RFP if the clerk doesn't have the authority to moderate or to formulate the questions?
Do you want to take that one, Andy?
Sure, I'll make an attempt.
Anshul can probably do it too, because there's a legal question there.
I will jump in and then correct me if I am incorrect. We as the office never formulated the questions, or sort of what we did is we took an application and reviewed, and the folks putting on the debates always put on the questions. So what this has done is put a couple more sort of legal sort of parameters on who can and cannot ask the questions. Uh-huh. In the, no one that has an independent expenditure, no one that's, you know, endorsed a candidate, those pieces are in there. That being said, we're still sort of working out the complexities of this process, knowing that it was not the best experience for the majority of folks on the stage. From a standpoint of, we as an office never want to be the ones writing the questions, no matter what the race is, the election. So we would have no sort of authority, but our goal is to, through the application process, and if we do an RFP and bring in an outside consultant, that they have the legal framework in here of what is a fair and not fair question per se. But I don't know if I missed anything.
Thanks, Councilman Lewis and Councilman Sawyer, Anshul Bhaga, Assistant City Attorney. One thing I think that's maybe missing in this conversation is that in the prior language, the debate was held by sponsors that submitted applications to the Clerk and Recorder's Office. This language does require the Clerk and Recorder's Office to organize the debates. And then it allows the Clerk and Recorder's Office to contract with other parties to hold necessary components of the debate. So the main thing that this changes is it does require the Clerk and Recorder's Office to organize the debates.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. So then where would the dollars come from, and do we know how much?
We do not know how much. We're still sort of in discussions, and it's sort of going to depend on sort of what form or shape this takes. We're in discussions with Arts and Venues and Denver 8 and sort of starting to talk to the community to figure out what this would cost. It is our hope that we can cover the majority of the costs from the Fair Elections Fund. That being said, depending on the cost, we may have to come back to council for additional appropriations.
And I will just add to that, that is what contingency is for, right? By charter, we're required to put aside 2% contingency every year. That ends up being somewhere in my time here, it has been between $24 and $36 million. And so that is exactly what that's for, right? It is for unforeseen expenses or unforeseen issues that come up during the course of the year that haven't been budgeted for. And so in order to access that money, they would have to come to council and have a conversation about it. But that's what the contingency dollars are for.
No, and I understand that. This seems like it doesn't have to be unforeseen. Like if we actually just took a pause, figured out how much time we needed to get to at least an estimate about how much that might cost, then I'd feel a bit more comfortable, but it feels like we are moving forward. We don't actually know the numbers in terms of cost or where those dollars would come specifically from. And that just gives me some pause.
Yeah, I think it's 2025. Our elections are not till 2027. So there is time in both the 2026 and 2027 budget cycle for us to have that conversation. But they don't know at this time. That gives us two budget cycles for us to have the conversation as well, to be able to price it out a little bit better, for them to be able to work with the Department of Finance to make a budget request for it. So there's plenty of time here for the work to be done. That doesn't need to be specified in the language of the ordinance. Right, there's a kind of a difference between what you write into the ordinance as the language and what operationally happens on the back end. And the budget piece and conversation is the operational back end stuff that doesn't get written into the ordinance.
And Councilwoman Lewis, we've also asked Arts and Venues as well as Denver 8 to give us a best guess proposal. So they're pulling that information together. But I concur with Councilmember Sawyer. The process of the exact funding and the exact dollars, or even that full estimate, we will have two budget cycles, but we should have some level of information from our last discussion with Denver Arts and Venues, as we stated in committee, and our hope is to be able to provide that to council so you will have a ballpark sense of what that spend will look like.
I do understand it. I just don't understand it procedurally. It seems like we would first want to know what the dollar amount is before we approved something that we would be committing budget dollars to, especially during a time in which we have deficits, and because we're so far away from the election, it seems like we have enough time to be able to decide this. But maybe, Andy, I'll ask this for you. How much time do you all think it is going to take in order for you to know some of those answers?
It will definitely take longer than by next Tuesday. So I'll put that out there. There's a lot of moving parts with this sort of across the board. So, I feel confident in this language that as written that we have, flexibility. I don't want to commit to say the Fair Elections Fund can eat the full cost because I don't know the full cost of it. And we don't know how many candidates are going to be on the ballot. Sure. That's sort of the determining factor of solvency of the fund, to be completely honest. If there are 25 mayoral candidates that all take money from the fund, like it gets precarious, and we came real close to sort of exhausting the fund.
Sure.
That being said, the fund has expanded with expansions or with inflation. So, we're sort of the rough estimates is about in the $150,000-ish range,
okay.
Plus or minus 50 on sort of either side of it.
Thank you. That's
right. That being said, that's dependent on if we do Denver 8 all day and it's sort of, we start at 9 and go till, so there's a lot of sort of moving pieces. That being said, we're having conversations, Denver 8 and Arts and Venues have been great and really responsive. We've talked to the mayor's office. So we're sort of getting everyone lined up. The question is really who can take over what pieces, but it allows us to have the flexibility to do that.
Okay, thank you. That's really helpful. I appreciate your answers.
And Councilwoman Lewis, if I could just add one more thing to that. Remember the charter says you have to live in Denver for 2 years in order to be qualified to be a candidate. And for a district candidate, you have to be, you have to live in Denver for in that district for 1 year, right? We're coming up on that 2 year mark.
When?
When it's April something, if first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh.
I think
April
it's the sixth. I think
April
it's
sixth,
the sixth,
2027.
Yes, but I can
so
get
we
back
have
that.
To have this legislation in place in time for those qualifying people. And it's not clear that that extra 4 weeks, 5 weeks is going to get us the information that we need. But the conversations are ongoing.
I'm not following. Why wouldn't it get us the information that we need in 4 weeks?
if we were going to delay the vote on this, we just sort of are up sort of against the timeline. I'm not sure I would have it within those 4 weeks.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, thank you for the clarity. Those are my questions.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Parody.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody. I think I have two things I want to ask, but one of them actually, I think I just misunderstood the timeline that you guys just referenced. I'm so sorry. Andy, could you come back up again and tell me what we're up against?
So to qualify to run for elected office in Denver as a municipal candidate, you have to establish residence within the boundaries of the city for 2 years, and you have to live in an individual council district for at least 1 year. And so as folks are maybe looking to move into the city or in the process of moving into the city, just sort of having this bill sort of set and they fully understand the commitments that and the changes, the sponsors have felt that getting it done by that time frame is important.
Right. Okay. Yes. And I remember that now from conversation with sponsors. And I'm sorry that I didn't realize that was what you all were referencing. Is there? But I'm just thinking that through a little bit. It feels to me, I'll just say, editorializing, not a question for Andy. You can sit down. That kind of decision making. As the bill has evolved, it had content that maybe would have impacted that more. But now, given the changes that we're making, it's hard for me to imagine someone that impacting like their decision to relocate to be an eligible candidate, because it's now more like fine-grained stuff. So with that said, the bill has evolved a lot. A ton of work has gone into it. I'm still chewing a little bit on the most recent changes. I know we got them last week, and that's my other question, I guess. With respect to the debates, the way we've defined what is basically like a conflict of interest kind of provision, so this entity is providing services for a debate. What it has in here is that they may not have endorsed, supported, opposed, contributed to, or made electioneering communications or independent expenditures related to a candidate. And that refers to like the host entity. They also can't be a political party. and I'm just chewing a little bit on, it's not because I have an objection, it just feels to me like what we're really going after here is like neutrality and conflicts, which are things that have sort of outside bodies of law that define those pretty well. So it would be sort of like conflicts of interest, perceived conflicts, or lack of neutrality in some way. And I'm a little leery about whether this list exactly captures all of that, I guess, in both directions. So I would love to know where it came from. I think that's the question. It's like, where does this come from, and why is this preferable to saying something like the entity shouldn't have a conflict or an appearance of a conflict?
And Anshul can definitely answer that question better since he's the drafter of the language, but I will say there are some very specific things about campaign finance law that are different from sort of a general conflict of interest. For example, the electioneering communication language is, I think, pretty specific to the clerk's office needs and desires. So, Anshul, do you want to answer that one?
Sure, happy to. Thanks for the question, Councilwoman Sawyer and Councilwoman Parody. Anshul Baga, Assistant City Attorney. The language came from federal statutes that govern presidential debates. Mm-hmm. We did tweak the language a little bit because it's not a one-for-one match. So because our elections are nonpartisan anyway, that's why the affiliation prohibition is just for political parties. The federal language requires many of the similar things, so no independent electioneering communications in support or in opposition to a candidate. We added in, I believe, contributions specifically. Nick may remember better than I do specifically some of the language we added in, but generally it comes from the federal requirements for presidential debates. The last thing I'll say on this is that we are also cognizant of the fact that the ethics code requirements as it relates to conflicts would still continue to apply to any of these people that are city officers or incumbent city officers. So to the extent that the clerk and recorder is required to select a contractor to moderate the debate for the clerk and recorder, the ethics code would still apply to that transaction. Clerk and recorder would not be able to take a direct official action on something he has a substantial interest in. So all the stuff in our DRMC that regulates conflicts of interest would still apply. And then, like I said, Nick may have more specific memory on the phrases that we altered from the federal requirements on that particular provision.
Anshul, could you potentially circulate the federal regulation to us just as a reference point? Thank you. And Nick, did you want to add anything to that?
Good. Nick Mann, campaign finance administrator for the Office of the Denver Clerk and Reporter. Not really. I mean, I think that was a really good explanation. I think that that it covers the spirit of it. It covers what we already wanted to do, what we tried to do last time, and just put some more meat on the bones there. I think making it so that the moderator of any debate didn't donate to any of the candidates on the stage makes a lot of intuitive sense, even if it's not a direct corollary with federal law. And then even though it is in federal law, I want to shout out the independent expenditure also came from Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez, a really nice comment from her to make sure that any organization that's participating hasn't been involved in an IE. So those are two things that have come since the last draft.
Okay, great. Thank you all so much for that. And I guess one last thing to return to the sponsors. Am I misunderstanding the impact of the counting back and looking at when people would have to qualify for residency? Like, is there something more nuanced about that I'm missing about why we feel like we might need to get this done before then?
It's just setting expectations, right? We had this conversation on the last council when we were redrawing the council district boundaries for the same reason. Obviously, that one is a much bigger concern, right? Because you have to know if you live within the council district boundary. So that was a big one, but it is something that, you know, came up historically, and people really felt like setting the expectations very clearly before, you know, within that 2-year time frame. So there are already people who are declaring for candidacy for 2027. And so we need to make sure that we have the rules set that are clear within that 2-year time frame. I think that that is fair and that's the right thing to do. And so that's why we've done it. And I will just remind everyone, we have a required public hearing on this next week as well.
Yeah.
And we'll have a presentation on it then.
Yeah, okay, thank you so much. That is all that I wanted to ask about and I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you all. Madam Secretary, please put the next item on our screens. 250086, a bill for an ordinance changing the zoning classification for multiple properties in Chaffee Park, Sunnyside, Highland, and Jefferson Park. Councilmember Parity, will you please put Council Bill 250086 on the floor for publication?
I move that Council Bill 250086 be ordered published.
It has been moved and seconded. I will now introduce my motion. I move that Council Bill 250086 be postponed until Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. It has been moved and seconded. I'm postponing this rezoning in four neighborhoods in my council district. I have concern about one of the properties and we're doing concerted outreach to make sure that I am connecting with one of the owners as to if they should be part of the application or not part of the application. And I didn't feel like it was appropriate to amend the night that you all were making the decision and the determination on the application. So that's why I'm postponing it for introduction by 1 week, which would postpone the hearing date by 1 week, which hopefully can get me an opportunity to reach out to that property owner this week before next Tuesday. Madam Secretary, roll call on postponing Council Bill 250086 until Tuesday, February 18th, 2025.
Flynn?
Aye.
Lovedras?
Aye.
Gilmore?
Aye.
Gonzalez Gutierrez?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Cashman? Lewis?
Aye.
Parity?
Aye.
Romero Campbell?
Aye.
Sawyer?
Aye.
Torres?
Aye.
Watson?
Aye.
Madam President?
Aye. Madam Secretary, roll call on postponing Council Bill 250086 until Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. Oh, sorry. I was reading the wrong script. 13 ayes. Council Bill 250086 has been postponed until Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. This concludes the items to be called out. All bills for introduction are ordered published. Council members, remember that this is a consent or block vote and you will need to vote aye. Council Member Parity, will you please put the resolutions for adoption and the bills on final consideration for final passage on the floor?
I move that the resolutions be adopted and bills on final consideration be placed upon final consideration and do pass in a block for the following items. 250075, 250079, 250080, 250081, 250082, 0085, 0072, 0073, 0074, 0076, 0083, 0084, 0095, 0077, 0088, 0089, 0118, 0119, 0093, 0040, 0061, 0026, 0027, 0028.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded. Madam Secretary, roll call.
Flynn.
Aye.
Alvarez.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Cashman.
Aye.
Lewis.
Aye.
Parity.
Aye.
Romero Campbell.
Aye.
Sawyer.
Aye.
Torres.
Aye.
Watson.
Aye.
Madam President.
Aye. Madam Secretary, close the voting and announce the results.
13 ayes.
13 ayes. The resolutions have been adopted and the bills have been placed upon final consideration and do pass. On Tuesday, February 18, 2025, Council will hold a required public hearing on Council Bill 24-1676, amending Chapter 15, Article 3, concerning campaign finances. Any protest against Council Bill 25-0086. Sorry, the script is being updated live time. That's really hard on my eyes. Okay, on Tuesday, let me start over. On Tuesday, February 18, 2025, Council will hold a required public hearing on Council Bill 24-1676, amending Chapter 15, Article 3, concerning campaign finances. There being no further business before this body, this meeting is adjourned.